All right, let's thank everybody for listening, because we've been forgetting to do that, especially anybody that made it this far.
I know, really. Honestly, you have stamina, people. You have so much stamina. It's impressive. Call me.
Once again, the last thing of the show is going to appear at the beginning of the show.
Okay. What is this? The fifth podcast of the Ad Brief, together with me and Noah Rosenberg. Today we're going to talk about, I have no idea what we're going to talk about.
I don't know, but I've got a horrible concoction today. It's, I wanted to make a Manhattan, but there wasn't enough in the glass. I was really thirsty, so I made a Manhattan with some bourbon, and then I filled it up the rest of the way with water, and then didn't taste like anything, so I put some those little oranges, you can see them floating in there, instead of cherries. It's really bad. Yeah, it's pretty horrible.
Really bad idea. Okay, this is what I'm drinking. Can you see the can? This is awful. Look at that.
That's what you need to be up. Well, we'll say we want to keep a little bit of mystery here, but I'm in St. Louis, and Osk is somewhere many hours ahead of me, so it's very late for
her. Yeah, Jolt Cola energy drink. And it's got taurine, guarana, ginseng, and B complex. I'm going to sleep next Tuesday.
Can we share what you ate a few slices of for lunch this week?
Yeah, reindeer.
How did you have it prepared?
Oh, it depends on what day of the week you're asking. But yeah, I had some roasted reindeer, and then I had some fried reindeer, and then I had some oven-baked reindeer. And I've also had some smoked reindeer heart. I have yet to experience the reindeer soup, but that's not really in season.
I think of all of those, soup is probably the most people would be common. When you have fried reindeer, does the nose still glow? That's not even, don't even laugh. That's not even funny. What? So it was fried. Like, what does that even mean? I don't eat a lot of fried meat.
No. But like, what you would do is like, you get a fillet or something, and you'd sear it, and then you'd oven bake the rest of it. You know, like you eat it with any fillet.
The way, any way you'd prepare a reindeer, the common way. Yeah, everybody.
Any way you'd prepare a big slice of meat, you know, you just kind of scare it a little bit and then put it in the oven.
So you had reindeer steak.
Yeah.
And you said it was pretty delicious.
Yes, it was awesome. I've longed for that for a while.
Well, you make it sound normal, but I gotta imagine that's pretty exotic.
No, it's perfectly normal.
I mean, we have like an international market here where I can get some pretty creepy things. Durian. I can get all kind of weird cuttlefish, seafood from around the world. I have never seen reindeer.
Oh, well, I've smuggled reindeer to the States, and I probably shouldn't admit this where somebody can hear it, because you're not supposed to, but...
You disguised it as an elk?
I won't do it again. I won't tell you how I did it either, in case I fancy doing it again. But
hopefully it was frozen.
Yeah, like I would totally. You know, there's a difficulty in importing meats to the States, and there's ways of doing it. And the reason for certain elk meats and reindeer meats is because they're afraid of mad cow disease. So they would prevent certain meats coming into the States because of mad cow disease, which do not affect reindeer, obviously.
Right.
So technically, you could just walk in with reindeer. It's just that I don't want to have this discussion with a TSA agent.
I promise you, this is mystical meat that doesn't really exist. It came from the North Pole. You don't have any rules about it.
There's rules, and it's actually technically okay. It's just you don't want to discuss it with somebody who never even thought of it. You know?
Oh, okay. They'll look at you like you're a baby killer.
Yeah, and it's like...
You're eating Santa.
Yeah, it's like you came here with whale fat or something. It's like, whale fat's delicious. What the hell are you talking about?
It makes good perfume. So here's a little segue for you. Speaking of things that some people find repulsive, you were telling me, I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard there was an ad that caused a bunch of controversy this week.
Oh, the Hyundai ad. Well, what they did was, the idea is, this man is, he's a depressed character because he found out that his wife is pregnant with his father's child. And it's just, it gets kind of ridiculous. He tries to end his life by inhaling the car exhaust fumes. It's a 100% water car thing, so he can't kill himself with it.
And that's funny?
And that's the funny. But it's just, no, it's not very funny at all, is it?
I did see that. I haven't seen the ad, but I saw the comment. Yeah, I saw what the writer said, that it reminded her of a tragic suicide of her own father.
No, right. Holly said that.
Yeah.
And no, she's right. It wasn't. Okay, right. She can pull from a personal experience, and you know, all respect to her for that. But I think what she said later was much better. In a paragraph later, she says that she worked on car account and specifically Hyundai for a year, and in all that time, she never thought that, you know, relying on something as stupid as suicide was the way to be the most creative thing ever. And that was,
Yeah.
I thought that was quite good. Yeah, no, but it's true though. I mean, we shouldn't use. I understand. There's a thing, right? There's a fine line between black humor and something that's just really tasteless and dumb. And this is the worst part about this suicide by car ads is that we've seen it 5 times. So I find it just incredibly lazy. So that's where I have a problem, that it's lazy.
Yeah. There's also this other thing about that seems to happen in creative departments where when one or two ideas get sort of cut down or you know, maybe called out for reasons that the creatives don't agree with, maybe it's like, oh, that's too edgy. You feel this need somehow to push to the edgiest thing possible, and that if you can somehow produce that, that's a get or a win because you feel these pressures to not do that kind of stuff. And so you immediately go as far out as you could go. Like, it's either going to be suicide, child pornography, or rape. Like, those are the only three things you could do just because nobody could possibly approve that. And then if you actually produce it, it's somehow daring the world to say, hey, we produced this thing that, or somehow got this approved by the client, a thing that never could have been approved. So aren't we amazing at dealing with our client? That's always the tone I seem to hear, you know, from creatives when they see that stuff. That creatives love those spots because it's kind of like we wish we could live in a world where we could say whatever we wanted, whether it's good or not, or whether it makes a good ad or not. It's almost this like, you know, once somebody's telling you not to do something, you do the most rebellious thing you possibly can.
Sort of like the teenage complex or something.
Yeah.
It might be. I mean, yeah, no, I can see that because I mean, if you look at how different the ads are, the ones that I put up on the website, which have the base same idea. I mean, the Citroen one from whatever year it was, he gets this note that his wife is pregnant with his child. You know, this is like stupid black comedy. It's kind of ridiculous, and the way it's like super expressive and everything. It makes it just so exaggerated. And then you look at the ones later, and they're so discreet in comparison, and they're just not as funny. And then there's an Audi one where you have the button, like after the Audi sort of thing that says, oh, it's a car that has like no exhaust or something. He's trying to kill himself with the window. He's trying to guillotine his own head. And it's like, wow, that's like one of those stupid American buttons that you always have to put at the end of the ad, the
Yeah.
humor
Yeah.
reinforcement.
Right. But it almost sounds like Bobcat Goldthwait did it.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Which
It's just the way the same idea is treated so differently is very interesting to me.
but on Mad Men, remember Lane, do you watch Mad Men?
No, and you do, clearly.
Okay, I do, yeah. Well, I don't know if this is a spoiler, but there was a character that attempted to do it that way. And I can't remember what the reason was. The hose kept falling out or something. Or the car was a, no, it was a Jaguar and it wouldn't start. That was the problem. So it had to do with them having the Jaguar account and then, you know, it didn't turn on and so he couldn't kill himself. And that was sort of appropriate black comedy to that scene. They weren't trying to make you like something later on. But it is odd too. Like, isn't an electric car an interesting enough thing, especially an electric car, that there's other angles you can go with, or that there's anything about emissions that we know other than that that's a good way to commit suicide?
Yeah, no, that's the funny
I
thing,
don't
because I
know.
remember these ridiculously good-looking ads from the 90s, and it showed the most beautiful car I've ever seen, and I remember the typography and the photography of the car and just the way it was laid out in magazines was stunning. And I know that the ads came from Goodby, and I can't remember the brand, and I can't remember the car, and I can't remember anything else about it. I just know it was beautiful, and I really wanted this car. And I have no
Does
idea
that
what it
make it a
was.
successful ad?
Yeah, no, I have no clue what it was.
Yeah.
It was just that, you know, the emissions were lower, and look how pretty this is. And I was like, yes, that will follow you forever, whatever your name is.
Yeah. Do you get into, speaking of the beauty of stuff, do you get into design versus advertising and that whole distinction? Because it sounds like what you saw was maybe a good example of that was functioning as a design where it was, really gorgeously communicating something visual, but maybe wasn't laden by concept or wasn't attempting to have a sales message in it.
No.
Is that the distinction between the two?
I don't think I'd get into that. I get into designers versus art directors a lot because I want people to understand, or especially my mother, I think, that an art director is not quite the same thing as a designer. And there's a lot of people who don't understand that there's a difference between the two. But I mean, as an art director, you would more steer the idea and find somebody who's better at visually communicating or executing certain parts of the idea. Whereas a designer, you're probably executing these ideas, and then you could be designers of specific fields. And this is like difficult for people to grasp outside of the industry because they think all designers are the same thing. So they're like, oh, you should meet her. She's like a children's book designer, so you and her should have lots of in common, you and the designer of certain apps, which is a completely different system.
Right, but you both use Photoshop, so there's some assumption that because you have that in common, that that's the
It
link.
must be equally frustrating to writers, though. I mean, it's like, oh wow, here's this poet, you should meet him because you're a journalist,
Yeah.
and it's, what you have. It's just like, stop. You don't know. You have no idea.
You guys both have typewriters.
Yeah, exactly. So.
I think that the interesting thing about writers is copywriters, at least. It seems to me a lot of them aren't validated until they do something else or write a novel. Like our friend on wrote a great book, which I read on my Kindle, and I enjoyed it a lot. And I also like his ad writing a lot too. And I don't know, I don't all of a sudden think of him as a different person from that.
No, he's exactly the same, and that book was excellent, and it showed a lot of him, didn't it?
Yeah.
Because we knew him before,
I guess
and
so.
that was like a little bit of an explosion of his personality coming out in
Yeah.
the novel form, basically. To me, it was just like I've seen the tongue piercing and the hair going on in there.
Yeah. But he's the first person I know as a copywriter that actually did it. You know, every copywriter's got a novel. He got his published and it was good. And then what?
Oh, he got another one published, and that was good too.
Yeah, but I mean, there was like this idea that once I get my book out, then I'm validated. Right now, I'm not an artist, but.
Then you turn into like one of the great American
Yeah.
authors. Yeah, sure.
But right now, like the idea of author, the only ones that we celebrate are like ones that write vampire books.
Doesn't it seem like we don't celebrate anything that is has any depth? Because I mean, if we're looking at, it's just a couple of years ago, I was in Florida with Kidlet, and I was going to show her Disney. Because I was like, yeah, I went there when I was four, so I'm going to force you to do the same shit. And I'm walking down some sort of like sort of gator place or something, and there's a really huge woman comes at me, and she's wearing a shirt that says, Mrs. What's the vampire's name?
Right, yeah, Pattinson or whatever.
Yeah, Mrs. Yeah, and she's like the biggest woman you ever saw. And she's like, she's probably only 30, so she's younger than me. But she's massive and she let herself go something awful. And she's wearing this t-shirt and she's bringing her kid with her that she probably had when she was 10. And the kid's like 22, I don't know, and has another kid. And it's just like, I'm freaking out just watching this. I'm just like, oh dear Lord, why did I pay so much money to fly to Florida? Why am I such an idiot? It's like, I just went to Farkland. Yeah, no, it's kind of scary some places.
But that was a book that they
Sorry,
read.
I mean no offense to Floridians.
Are you a Game of Thrones person?
No, I haven't watched any of that. I'm actually trying to actively avoid anything that's on TV.
That's probably pretty an okay subject, except for the commercials.
Except for the commercials. Yeah, no, I watch seriously, I watch TV for the commercials, and I do this like for real.
Yeah, but I don't watch anything unless I've put it on now, which is a nice luxury of our modern era. But to talk about the design thing a little bit more. So my friend, who I think we may be able to get on the show for another interview in the future, he at first was a little apprehensive because I said it was from Adland, and he He said, "Well, I don't run an ad agency. I have a design shop."
Right, like there's such a huge difference, isn't there?
He wasn't sure what he would have to talk about, and so what we, you know, what I was interested in talking to him about, and which I think we can still get him on, is they've recently had some work appear in some good trade pubs, CA and in Fast Company, and getting some good press.
Yeah, he showed me. That was good stuff. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if you have good stuff, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
does
and
it?
I think it, you know, it'd be interesting to hear. I think everybody's journey is the same, where, you know, at the start of our career, we're looking for that affirmation, and we feel like that's important to get. And I think there are some benefits to it. You know,
I think there's a difference between advertising agency and design agencies. It doesn't really matter if they're ad or design or whatever. There's always going to be the clique of agencies, whichever discipline they want to like adhere himself to, that want to do a good idea first. And they just want to like execute something brilliant first. And then there's agencies who want to, you know, be the shop that does X, or accidentally fall into the trap of being the shop that does X, you know?
Right. Or maybe they're trying to do that on purpose to set themselves apart, or to you know, distinguish
right.
them. So that if you need X, you call them first, I guess.
Right. Which would be an easy way to get clients. But I mean, I think wherever you might start, there's a lot of places who just really want to go for the great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the great idea places, it doesn't matter if they're an advertising place or an app place or a design place or we're going to solve your mechanical problems place. If they're going for the great idea, we're the same place.
And we should celebrate all of that. He was saying that, I think it was AdAge had contacted him. They were running some competition. They wanted him to enter. And they said, send in your best campaign. And he said, man, in 12 years, I've never done a campaign. He never done
right.
three, you know, he's done multiple executions, I guess, like different packages, you know, within a family of packages, but never an ad campaign in that classic sense. And I'm kind of like, you know, that's really AdAge's fault for not getting it, for not being part of the
crew. Yeah. And I can understand that too, because I get the same thing where it's like, these people will send me all this work for putting it up on AdLand, and like, you know what, you could tell me that, but you could do it in like sort of a case study or something. So then I can put it up as a film, because, you know, 90% of what I put up is commercials. And if you're going to tell me this in the way of an interactive website that I can only link to, that's going to disappear in a month. And I'm not really that interested in linking to something that's going to vanish in a month. So I've been telling people that they can make a case study. So then the case study thing became like a little bit stupid too, but it's like, really, honestly, you could just take screen dumps and I could put it up in print, you know, if you're cool with that. I'm cool
yeah.
with that. So it becomes a way of, you have to, how to present your work to where you want it to be shown. So if you want it to be shown in AdAge, you have to look at how AdAge shows your work, and then you have to present to them. So I mean, I have lots of people who just, you know, sort of email me a single link, and then they just sort of expect me to do all kinds of work to show their work, and I'm really not that interested in spending 2.5 hours to unlock their website, because I'm just not.
Right, like then it's all up to you to take all the screenshots or finding some way of connecting with you.
Yeah, and it's like, nobody's paying me for it, so maybe you should tell me what this website's about and I might get interested. So what you have to do, you have to pitch me, and you have to think about how to pitch each individual, you know, advertising person or each individual press person who's going to write about your work, or how you're going to show it to a jury. I mean, they send these case studies to juries, this is jury season. So they're now sending case studies like crazy. I've gotten case studies that are 6 minutes long. And I'm like, this is not going to happen. I'm not going to put up a 6 minute long case study, even if I find it hugely amusing.
For a 30 second ad?
Yeah, not happening. Or, you know, for an app, it's just not going to
yeah.
happen. And then if I tell them, and I like come with like the well-meaning, you know what, you have another month before the deadline for can, maybe you should edit it down. And they give me attitude. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm sorry. I'll just never give you advice again then. Because honestly, you have judges sitting there for like 3 days. As soon as they find you going past 30 seconds, they're going to press you goodbye on the button. That's what they do.
Yeah.
So take this advice. Make your case studies stupidly short.
Yeah.
And if you can't do that, then don't bother anybody with them.
So Or you won't benefit from that award anyway if you're trying to go for an award that isn't applicable. Like if I do a great app, I'm not sure that Press and Ad Age is necessarily the right place for it anyway.
It might not be, no. I mean, if you're doing a great app, I mean, what you're essentially doing is doing a great app for a client, and you probably want press where the client's customers are.
Right.
So you should look at where the client customers are reading their magazines or newspapers or stories or watching their TV.
For the clients in general. Yeah, I mean, an ad, I think, and this is something I'm surprised that is still a conversation in industry, because it seems like such a solved thing by now, but... you know, an ad is one possible solution to one kind of specific business problem, which is like, we have this big rectangle to fill, or we have these 30 seconds to fill. Okay, an ad is a solve for that. But very rarely anymore do clients come with that as the business problem. I mean, an ad is kind of the solution to, what do I do with all this media I bought? You know, that's kind of where they started, right? And the whole idea of an agent, of calling ourselves an agency, is even a little bit gone beyond. Like when people ask me what was our company? Well, I've never bought any media. I've never gone out and represented my client to the world in that sense of being their agent, literally. So I don't have an agency, but brands come to me with brand problems and we solve them using creativity and thinking. And we come up with clever solutions that use the thinking that I learned in ad agencies. So am I an agency? Am I a firm? Am I a shop? Like,
yeah, I know. It's actually quite disturbing how much the non-buying of media actually, you know, when the media agencies separated from the advertising agencies in the 90s, how much it actually shook up the industry.
Yeah.
It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, it used to be, I remember when I got briefs that were this kind of stupid, right? I have gotten this brief, and it's not a joke, where it said, double page spread, national magazine, or rather national newspaper, which was like the large newspaper, not a tabloid, but a large one, like the double page spread, to reach skater kids between the ages of 12 and 18 and tell them, this is the best part, that there will be a tabloid newspaper out on weekends specifically for them.
For skaters. Why not include some wax for them to put on some stairs in the paper instead of the...
No, it was so ridiculous. You're going to reach people about a new newspaper in the old newspaper, and you're going to reach the specific target that does not read the old newspaper.
But they had the rectangle they had to fill. They bought the media already.
They did.
I mean, that's always the case. Or so often the case of
that,
a bad
but that's
assignment.
When you come up with solutions like we shouldn't put anything there at all, or maybe we should just paint it pink, or we should just do something that's really disturbing, right? Which would the kids would take notice of, right? And that's when they go, no, that's too crazy. And it's like, but you put us in this box.
Yeah.
And that's when it becomes fun. When you get a brief that is that kind of a box and you just want to break the box, that's when it becomes really interesting. But when you have no box at all, and it's like you can use any media in the world, you can go anywhere on the web, you can do anything at all, you can, you know, make sure it spreads, and people start breaking the box anyway, it's like, well, now you're just being stupid.
Yeah.
Because you need to reach whoever it is that's going to buy whatever you're selling.
What box do you think the people who did the suicide ad were put in?
I think they were put in, I am now the new CCO of a company, and I want to make my name really famous. Wow. Just say that.
Infamous.
Infamous. That would be the word. I don't know. I think everybody's in trouble over that one, to be honest.
Yeah, but you got to imagine when they made it, they were like, this is great.
Honestly, I have no idea how you get a client to sign off for something like that. And then they will go and just go, no, we had nothing to do with it later.
Who pays for the production on them? The production companies donate it?
I don't know. I mean, it's like, okay, let's take an interesting one. Let's go all the way back to like 2003 and take the Volkswagen Polo one with the suicide bomber.
Sure.
Remember that one?
So the bomber's in a little hatchback. He pulls up, he pulls the cord. Nothing happens except for he blows up because the car was too durable.
Yeah. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Disturbing and hilarious.
Yeah.
It's incredibly disturbing. It's very risque and...
It's the kind of humor we used to come up with when we were sitting around watching Beavis and Butthead in high school. You know, it's very.
But this, I think, is the difference, though, is because, you know, we see this. It works up. He comes out of this flat in London. He gets into his car. He's wearing the suicide veil. He drives up to a cafe. He parks outside. He's planned this so well. He pulls the cord. He explodes. Nothing around him happens. The Polo is perfectly untouched. And then it just goes, VW Polo, strong, but tough, or something. So it always works with the tagline. And this is how I remember ads, especially VW ads, being in the 90s. They were always like, the tagline would explain it all. What happened to those ads?
Arnold lost the account. Now, I don't know who did that one in particular, but... I don't know. There, you know, if you go back and it's easy to say even what happened to concept in general. And I think it's like you were saying about we don't celebrate anything with depth. Having a concept implies that the viewer needs to do a little bit of work. And, you know, that everything isn't completely digestible. There's different kinds of work, right? We were concepting some we were talking about banner ads today and maybe doing one where it was like a game that solves itself for this product we're working on. And I kind of was like, wait a minute. If it was like Tetris, but it would fill up Tetris for you. That's not fun anymore, right? If you had a button in Tetris and it would put all the blocks in the right place, you'd never play Tetris again. No. So there's like something about challenge that's exciting. There's something about it that remains compelling. And even on, if you look at, the top iPhone apps, there are always these games where you actually pay money to make the game a little easier, or you pay money to change the challenge. Like that a challenge in a game is something so core that we find so delightful that we'll even pay money to get to engage in it differently.
Well, I think like when it comes to Angry Birds, when you buy the eagle, it's because you're so incredibly frustrated. Right. You're just like, die, motherfucker, die.
Right. But to me, that's how I like ads. I like ads to be like games. See, even in Angry Birds, you were so frustrated at it, but you were still willing to continue. You didn't just trash the app.
Yeah, no, I like.
You
I
paid
like,
money to solve
I like
it.
Ads. Like, to me, a perfect ad is like a comic book. If you remove every language, every like speech bubble from the comic book, you have no idea what's really going on. But if you move every picture and you keep the speech bubbles, you have no idea what's going on. Like, if you keep them together, that's when you get it. That's what I want ads to be like. I don't want ads to do the same exact thing in the picture as they do in the speech bubble. And you see a lot of ads doing that. It's all CSAY. It's just like, okay, here's the picture, and this is the line saying exactly the same thing that the picture did. And it bothers me a lot that I see more and more of these. And it's just like, did you guys not go to ad school or something? How did you get work? Like, seriously, you're not giving me these 10 seconds of putting the words and the picture together, and that bothers me.
Yeah.
It's like a bad itch.
Yeah. Well, and I think like it's like Luke Sullivan said in Hey Whipple, if you can take the words off and it still works, they shouldn't be on there.
Yeah. No. Absolutely.
If
not.
It can still function without it. And it's not a job of how much can you add on here, but how much can you take away? And how simple can you make it? And
but they always said that's what they say about art too. That's what they say about design. Wasn't Michelangelo who said that I had a piece of marble and then I just removed the parts that weren't supposed to be
there? Weren't the statue.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it works.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the hardest thing to learn. And now that we're doing more things. We're not doing, you know, posters or TV commercials or TV shows or entertainment. Or it seems like we're doing so much more. But what we're still doing is the same thing. We're solving a basic problem. There's a client that comes to us with something that needs to be solved, and we need to help them solve it. Like, okay, 100 million years ago, there's a client that comes over and he says, we're not selling enough farm-produced foods to America. And that's when some PR guy invents bacon and egg breakfast. I mean, this is a 1930s invention. Nobody else had bacon and egg breakfast before. And this is a PR invention.
Similar to Santa Claus and the reindeer.
Yeah.
So what did people eat for breakfast? Fish?
No. Oats,
yeah. They had whatever they could afford, I guess.
Well, oats is all around all the time. It doesn't go bad. Bacon and eggs go bad. Yeah. That's like a refrigerator thing.
I was trying to explain to somebody that for the vast amount of history, most people were vegetarians, just not on purpose. He just couldn't ever get, and nobody had access to it. You know, in most countries, you have rice with a little bit of meat, and that's your meal. You know, it's like a garnish versus here where you have rice on the side. But
or maybe you're like a periodic meat eater. It's like once you grab one of those reindeers, you eat like crazy,
right.
like a
right.
month,
and then the rest of your vegetarian.
Once you finish the hoofs and the ears, you're done.
But it's funny when you're talking about reindeer. I mean, isn't that all invented by Coca-Cola in the States? The whole Santa Claus and the red jacket, and Rudolph was from a commercial.
Oh, that's really funny. No, Jenny Nyström is a painter in Sweden who used to paint our traditional Jul Tomte, which is our Santa Claus. And she would make all sorts of paintings of it, and that's what Coca-Cola used to base their Santa Claus on. So it's actually based on a Swedish female artist.
But still was a contemporary at the time, right?
Yeah. No, she was a contemporary thing. She used to have, but her Santa Claus was obviously ours with, you know, coming with the goats and stuff. Our Santa Claus is dressed like that.
In a red coat with white ruffles?
Yes. It used to be a gray coat with white ruffles, but then with Jenny, it became red. That was her thing.
And then so that was already a cultural construct, and then the commercial just took it to another level. But now we sort of believe it somehow transcends all that, and that it's sort of this thing that extends beyond all time and was created for some other purpose other than to sell products. Did we talk about Thanksgiving ever? I can't remember if we've talked about it on.
We might have mentioned it, but I don't think we did. No. It was interesting to see my daughter see Thanksgiving for the first time because she'd never seen it before, and she just went all in for that.
Just because all the other kids were into it?
Well, it's partly because, yeah, you know, you get to draw turkeys in school, and you get to read about the first Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Have a bit of a play going on and all that stuff. So, yeah, there's preparation.
Did you have a concept similar to Black Friday in Sweden?
No.
So, okay, you know, obviously the day after Thanksgiving is a great day to go shopping because everybody has a day off. It started the other way around. They wanted a reason for everybody to have a day off so they could go shopping. So they made Thanksgiving. Nothing about Thanksgiving happened in November. The actual occurrence of whenever, you know, that feast, it could have been in October. We don't know. There's no specific date that says Thanksgiving happens, you know, similar to Christmas. It's really winter solstice, right? Like Jesus was
right.
Probably born in, I think it was February, they say.
Yeah, and maybe they just placed the winter solstice on the traditional midwinter blue.
Yeah, no, that was exact, to make Christianity appeal to the pagans.
Pagans.
So Thanksgiving
like
was people like you still. So Thanksgiving was invented by FDR. During his administration, he approved of it to give people a reason to have a day off at the last week of November to go shopping for Christmas. And so we have a holiday before it.
I remember my mother used to go shopping for Christmas during Thanksgiving, and then she'd buy all this stuff and hide it around the house, and I would find it. And then on Christmas, she would not. And then she would say, I had another gift here somewhere, and I'd run and find them. And this happened every Christmas, which was hilarious. And then she still talks about this one Christmas where there was a gift missing. And I keep reminding her that, no, that was the remote control Jeep. And I found it.
No, there's still one out there.
Yeah, I opened them and I played with them for like a month before it was Christmas.
So I did one other thing I want to talk about, design related, you know, or trend related. So, you know, we're talking about in advertising a lot. Sometimes ads come around that seem like they're functioning just as a part of a trend. And how can you separate if the trend is a better development or a better type of execution, or it's just popular? And I was just reading, for example, this is kind of a design discussion, but it's something I'm interested in. I'm being on kind of the app side of the marketing industry or the brand industry, is they're talking about this blowback against apps that look like physical things. So, like, you know, you have your notes app and it looks like a notepad. And I think when the iPhone and especially the iPad first came out, that was really exciting and engaging for people because then they could understand how to use these things. You know, you see your address book. Oh, it looks like an address book. I know what that's for. It gives you sort of a launching point to enter in and know how to use these things. It went a little bit off the rails. So in the podcast app that Apple released, if you tapped a certain series of buttons, you got a little thing that looked like a reel-to-reel tape recorder. And it had absolutely no function in the app at all, other than to look cool and be an homage to that. I mean, it had nothing to do with the playing of podcasts. So today there was a story that maybe the new version of iOS is going to have flat design. And that's something, a cause of celebration that, you know, sort of like once a trend crests and there's a name for it. So the name for that kind of design is scoiomorphic, which is like a Greek word. And it refers to even like those little rivets on your jeans that aren't really holding anything together, or arch-shaped, you know, in front of my house, I have pillars that look like arches, but I'm sure I could knock them out and they're not holding anything up. They're just there to look like a house. They're signifying a different era when those things were important. In the same way that like the save icon is a floppy disk, yeah, when even most of my staff have never used floppy disks.
It's the same fact that we have a trash can that still looks like a trash can.
Yeah.
On our computers. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous because that's not what a file trash can should look like.
Yeah, that's not where data would go. But at least that's still, like, I still have a trash can in my office, but I haven't seen a floppy disk in 10 years, you know, a 3.5. And so, anyway, so the story was today that now that Johnny Ive is in charge of the OS, they're going to make it flat. And now everybody's like, yay, let's have all design just be flat. And I see those kind of trends happen too in advertising, where it's sort of like, oh, this is the cool new thing that's safe now and everybody likes it. And if you still like the other thing, there's something wrong with you. But 2 weeks ago, when everybody liked that other thing, there was nothing you could do better than do something in that style.
I find it really interesting, like, not only how fast this suddenly goes, because it goes very fast now. It used to take a little while before we went from, you know, what's her name, Susan Kay? Who did the first floppy disks and everything, and it was like,
oh yeah, Susan Kerr.
Susan Kerr, right? So it took a while before we went from her aesthetic to the more flatter, blocky, bigger blocks aesthetic, and then we went to this shiny aesthetic, and then all of a sudden I'm finding myself in university in Sweden teaching this design class where I'm explaining how digital design influences design in the outside physical world, and how the physical world influences digital design. I mean, it starts with the fact that in digital design, we only had really tiny bits on the screen, and that's why Miss Kerr could only do the little blocky things that she did, because she had the physical limitation. But now if you look at the news in Sweden and everything, it's copying things that you see on iPhones. And the reason it's doing it is because it looks cool on an iPhone. And so even on Channel 3 in Sweden today, when they do the little idents for Channel 3, which are excellent idents, they just have like really ridiculous things. Like you'll have a silhouette of a couple sitting on a park bench. So you'll have sky, couple, park bench, ground. And then there'll be this little thing, a little white chunk going through the ground and the number 3 going right above it. Exactly the same way that you would physically pull your finger across an iPhone screen or the Chrome interface. So that's how digital design influences other design that has nothing to do with it, really.
Yeah.
Which I find really interesting. And you've had cigarette packets over here that have bitmaps on them. Marlboro did that for a while, which is interesting. And Marlboro did this really funky F1, what do you call it? Not F1.
Formula One, the race car?
Formula One, yeah. Where they painted it in a specific way, so only when it was going at full speed would you see the Marlboro logo.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Which is very clever, because you're not allowed to do it anymore. You're not allowed to like paint logos all over them.
Yeah.
So they were like, we're not painting a logo over it. We're just making it red and white.
This was in Sweden?
Well, that was in Italy, but it was still following European law.
What was the General car? Or did they have one?
Don't know.
They don't have cars for snooze?
No. They don't have cars for snooze. Nobody pays money for snooze. Snooze doesn't sponsor anything. It sponsors every person that has a little big fat lip.
Yeah. I used to work on that brand a couple years ago.
Did you ever try snooze?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you poor thing.
Yeah. No, you know what? If you get a peppermint snooze with a Sprite, that's kind of a good taste.
Back in my day, mate, we had to like bring it up and pack it together ourselves. It didn't come in little bags, and they were never tasting like peppermint.
Yeah. No, don't you, is that, does that to make it appeal to kids?
I would think it makes it appeal to people who are complete wusses, yeah. Sorry. No, yeah, I don't know if it makes it appeal to kids. But yeah, it makes it a lot more. They do peppermint, they do vanilla. And then they do the whole portion pack thing. It makes it very easy to deal with.
Yeah, it's like a, so probably most people that are listening have no idea what we're talking about, but it's real Swedish snus, not the stuff you get here in the States, which is from Camel. And I don't really use the stuff ever. I try it, I should say. I'm not an advocate of it, but it comes, it's just, that's like tobacco tea. It's steamed tobacco in the same paper that a tea bag comes in, and you put it in your upper lip and it gives you a buzz. Is that a good way
upper
of putting it?
Real Swedish snus in the 70s and 80s came in this hockey puck shaped box, right? That you would have in your back pocket. And you wanted to be cool, right? My brother, what he did was he actually put a hockey puck in the back of his jeans so it would make the circular shape as if he was a snoozer, which he never was because he didn't like the taste of tobacco and it was disgusting. So he would look cool, like the other cool guy.
Yeah.
But you would take it then, and it didn't come in a tea bag. You'd have to actually grab it with your fingers, and it's like pure, moist tobacco. And you'd make this little sort of ball out of it, and then you'd shove that up under your lip, and you tried not to spill it all over your teeth, and it starts tasting all peppery, and it starts going down your throat, and it just, you know, it's awful. You get woozy, and you get sick, and suddenly you're throwing up on somebody.
I thought that was the appeal.
Yeah, that's sort of it. If you can handle that, you're a cool kid.
I think that's the amazing thing about tobacco is it's like a completely miserable experience. And yet, you know, like you have to force yourself to get addicted to it.
Yeah. And then once you've done it, then you're like, you're one of the cool kids.
Yeah. And once you feel that rush. And the other thing, I never really got hooked on it, but even just talking about it now, I can feel what the buzz felt like.
Oh, it's horrible. I mean, I quit. It's a year ago now, and I come back over here, and everybody's smoking everywhere. So the first couple of nights, I'm having nightmares about smoking.
Like that you accidentally smoked again?
Yeah, because I'm walking through these clouds of people outside of office buildings smoking, you know?
Yeah.
And it's disturbing to me. You know, I'm getting off an airplane, and like 15 people around me are lighting up, and I'm just like, what is wrong with you? And now I suddenly realize that, dude, that really smells bad.
Cigarettes?
That smells awful.
Yeah, and you don't realize how much you smell like it after you do it either. You can't smell anything.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have other ad stuff you want to talk about?
Yeah, we should probably do that because now we just got too personal, didn't we? No, I thought it was interesting. We should probably talk about the whole Bandlander effect of that Hyundai ad because to me it was interesting that Holly writes about her personal experience of her father killing himself that way.
Right.
Suddenly, the ad's pulled, and it's all in The Guardian and The Mirror and all sorts of newspapers and magazines. So she had an incredible reach from her little Tumblr site. And I'm not saying her little Tumblr site like I'm like going, tiny little thing. It's just how big a personal voice can get. And it didn't seem to be that way a couple of years ago. Like, one person could protest in the same way.
Right.
So, I mean, there used to be, like, a backlash to tasteless ads in a certain way, but it just never really hit home in that. I'm wondering, is it because she actually works in the business, or is it because there's a different sensitivity today where, I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, there was a McDonald's ad that was trying to look like one of those psychological help ads or something that was in the Boston Tube, where it's like, we've all been there, we know what it feels like,
right.
But we love, you know, Big Mac or something.
Right.
But it's looking like we're all depressed and we're so sad. If you need help, you can call this number to get your Big Mac fix, which was the funny, right? And like, you know, 10 years ago, this would have been hilarious. I mean, in the 90s, we were all dyeing our hair orange and thinking this was really funny. And today it seems everybody's quite sensitive. And I'm just wondering if it's like, are we a little bit more sensitive today than we used to be?
Or are we reporting on it more? Are we hearing about it more? And, you know, drumming up the controversy because there's less to talk about.
Yeah, or is it that certain individuals can kick up a bigger stink?
Well, I mean, I think it also plays into, one of the top stories on Adlib right now is a banned ad, an ad that they didn't allow to run. And I think the whole general idea of a banned ad is an interesting concept. Remember I don't know if we talked about it, but the banned ad for Smart SodaStream got more attention for SodaStream than the ad itself ever could have. And that a lot of times, if and in the same time, I know this is an odd point for Hyundai, but we are all hearing that Hyundai has a zero emissions car.
That's true.
And I don't know if I even knew about one, or I don't know if I thought about them as a brand having one. So even though it goes into that whole is there any bad publicity kind of idea. Is it possible that no matter what you say, as long as you get attention for it. Now another example, and this is horrible to talk about, but do you think Mercedes got a lift from all the brand mentions during the Boston bomber thing?
Yeah, I thought you were going to say something else, but yeah, no. Mercedes has been around in a lot of evil scenarios, put it that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not sure if they got a lift during the Boston bomber thing. I mean, to me, that's like Hugo Boss and whatever. It's like, yeah, okay, I'm not sure. That's like a good thing.
Yeah, but we all know exactly what make and model of the car was. We know that the guy was driving it. We know because he was a
But
wealthy
then,
guy.
white Broncos would sell extremely well.
Maybe they did. I don't know. Did
It seems to me like every time there's a getaway weird vehicle going somewhere with a helicopter chasing them, it's a white fucking SUV of some sort.
Yeah.
And who have you ever seen anybody in a white SUV?
Only on the news. Maybe
Yeah.
you have to buy one so that you can get on the news. Maybe that's what they're thinking when they buy. But whatever. What were OJ's shoes too? Remember
I don't know.
that brand name? I want to say Manolo Blahnik or something.
Maybe it was. Oh, dear Lord, if it was them, that they got really popular 10 years later, so
Yeah,
maybe.
I can't remember what it was, but whatever it was like the association is this is what a rich guy wears.
He drives a
More
white
than
car.
yeah, more than this
It's
is
the
what a
whole
killer
white
wears.
car thing. What the hell? I mean, the only place I ever had a white car was Saudi, or I actually didn't because you had to pay 10 grand extra for them, but that was because you would sweat to death and anything else. So everybody needed a white car, and you'd be like, you'd paying extra and you'd be waiting extra long for the white car. And if you didn't have a white car, it wasn't just that you were uncool, you would be dying in it. So.
Or in LA, but not in Boston. The guy, I don't know.
No.
I don't know
So
the
why would you
connection.
have a white car anywhere else?
And apparently, it makes you a target for carjackers too. So I wouldn't go. I only ever buy a black car, based on
Yeah. A
that.
black car, so they confuse you with the cops all the time, and they'd be like, ooh, and they'd be slowing down in front of you.
Yeah.
Square headlights. Oh my God, there's square headlights.
Well, what do we got? I'm afraid I'm running out of stuff to cover.
Dude, we've spent an hour.
That's right. I think we're good. So next episode, let's try. I think I can bring in get us a good guest. And also, I wanted to see if we could reach out on the site and get some questions from people, and do a little
Yes, that's a good
Q&A.
idea. Because this feels like also, if people are happy to have learned something, that's awesome. And we wanted to do that. We wanted to speak to people to pick their brains and sort of make it a teaching sort of thing. That's great. And it makes me really pleased that we got that comment that somebody feels that he's learning something. That's
Yeah,
cool.
I know. I think if we, the, yeah, the more that we can make this actually a useful thing, we've actually contributed and not wasted this hour of.
I know that made me kind of do that little happy dance there because, I don't really
Yeah.
get compliments very often. So that's cool.
Especially in this business, right?
Hey, right. I'm totally sucking it up. I'm living
Yeah.
off of that for weeks. So yeah, that'd be awesome if we could talk to somebody and ask them questions and make it an extended learning thing. That'd be cool.
Cool. We'll push for it for next week.
Okay.
All right, Oscar, have a good night.
You too.
Good night.
Good night.